Okay, so thanks for the invitation. Today I'm going to tell you about dark matter with long-range forces. This work is done with Jonathan Huizhu and Jonathan Huizhu, Manoj, and the Swan paper with Jonathan. So I changed my title slightly. I tried to, because I wanted to include some more stuff, some recent result. So it's, the title is, looks like more general. Okay, so we just wanted to ask a very naive question. So can dark matter carry long range forces? Okay, so there are many scenarios that dark matter has such properties. The examples, the most recent examples is that we have the Jonathan and Jason Kumar and Huizhu and myself proposed the hidden charge of dark matter. So if dark, somehow dark matter is in the hidden sector, but there's a charge on unbroken hidden sector U1. Okay, recently there are many work on the, on try to explain the Palmyra and the Fermi results. In these models, they have broken hidden sector gauge symmetry, but the hidden sector gauge boson mass is very small, smaller than GeV scale. So it has a long-range force. Okay. Once we think about the dark matter with long-range interactions, actually we have to rethink many issues in cosmologies. So in this talk, basically I will go through the history of the dark matter in the early universe. So most of the talk, most of discussion here, I take this, the scenario one as an example. In the near the end of my talk, I will apply all this constraint to the dark matter models motivated by the Palmyra and the Fermi. So then we'll consider motivation and propose a model. So there's a hidden sector dark matter model. So, but we still keep the Wimper miracle in the hidden sector. But in this scenario, the dark matter is charged with unbroken hidden sector U1. Okay, so then we discuss the thermal relics in the hidden sector, and then we discuss the kinetic decoupling of the dark matter from the thermal baths, because this will affect the small structure formation. Dark matter has a long range interactions, the behaviors are very different compared to the UO wind. And then we will discuss about the primordial halo, because once the dark matter forms the primordial halo, because the mass of the primordial halo is very small, so the velocity dispersion of this dark matter particle is very small. So there is some sort of enhancement for the annihilation in the primordial halo. So you have to check that if this effect will reduce your relic abundance. Then we go to the bullet cluster, because basically a bullet cluster tells you that dark matter should be effectively has no collision. But if there's a long range force, the dark matter is a collision. So you have to check the bond from the bullet cluster. Then I will discuss about the shape of dark matter halos. So in the UO Wimper scenario, dark matter has no collision, basically. So you can you can form the dark matter halos, but if there's a long range force, so the dark matter particle in the halos can talk to each other and exchange the momentum and the energy. So they tend to form the more spherical halo. But in reality, we observed many very elliptical halos. So this will put a very strong bond on the self-interaction. Okay, so we begin with the motivation. We expect a new physics around TeV scale, of course. The first problem we face is the gauge hierarchy problem, because in standard model, Higgs is a scalar, so the quantum correction is a quadratic divergence. So if the standard model is up to the Planck scale, so you need to fine-tune the Higgs mass to get, you know, the correct electroweak scale breaking. And also, there's another very solid evidence for new physics is dark matter. So nearly 20% of total mass of the universe is dark matter. Why the dark matter related to TeV scale new physics? Because if the dark matter is thermally freeze out, it says in the beginning it will stay in the thermal equilibrium. But once the temperature drops, so the expansion rate is big enough such that the two dark matter particles cannot find it to each other to annihilate. It will decouple from the thermal bath and then keep it relics. If you assume the thermal freeze out picture of the dark matter, you can do some simple calculation. Roughly, the relic abundance goes to 0.1 and times this factor. So this is the thermally average cross-section. So if you the thermally average cross-section goes 3 × 10⁻²⁶ centimeter cubic per second, you will get correct relic abundance. You can do very simple dimensional analysis. The cross-section goes to some coupling to the force and the mass to square. If we take the mass, a weak scale mass, and the coupling is weak scale coupling, so the cross-section just is the right range. Let's take an example. The mass is 100 GeV, coupling is 0.1, so you get this number is very close to here. Okay, so this is, looks like a coincidence, but which means probably dark matter is related to new physics around TeV scale. Of course, we have been doing, try to combine this two problems together. So one good example is the supersymmetry. So weak scale in supersymmetry, weak scale is stabilized by SUSY. On the other hand, MSSM has a new particles called the LSP, lightest supersymmetrical partners for the dark matter candidate. Actually, in general, this is true, but if you think about more careful, there's some issues here, because in your model for the MSSM, usually, because LSP has to be stable, so usually you assume it's like neutralino to be the lightest LSP. But if a neutralino is the lightest LSP, so you have to make the gravitino is heavier than the neutralino. So then you actually induce you will induce some flavor problem. On the other hand, there's a nice scenario in such that you can avoid the flavor problem, the so-called gauge-mediated supersymmetry breaking. But in this scenario, actually gravitino is the lightest one. But because gravitino coupled to the standard model particle is so weak, so it cannot be the thermal dark matter candidate. Doesn't fit into this picture. So I will discuss about later more. So then, okay. So what do we really know about the dark matter? So we know that we have solid evidence from the gravitational interactions. We are pretty sure that there's no electromagnetic interaction associated with dark matter, and there's very tight constraint on the strong interaction. So from our observation, we can say that dark matter could be neutral. The standard model neutral. So actually, the idea of a hidden sector has a long history. You can go back to 1966. However, if dark matter is from the hidden sector, you may think there's a lot of freedom for the model building, right? But in this sense, can we still have the Wimper miracle? The coincidence we see that dark matter indicates some new physics around TeV scale. Is there any relation with the gauge hierarchy problem, like the usual SUSY did? And is there any signals? So we try to, in general, of course, the answer is no. But we try to say you can, with very good motivation, you can try to connect them to the hidden sector dark matter. So this is first proposed by Jonathan and Jason. It was it is a Wimper miracle in the hidden sector. So the idea is that if you look at the relic abundance calculation, it goes to 1/cross-section, thermally average cross-section. which means if the cross section is bigger, so the relic abundance is smaller. So then you do the dimensional analysis, you get this ratio. But actually, it turns out that when I put in the weak scale mass and the weak scale coupling, I get roughly like relic abundance. But the important thing actually is this ratio. It's not just a single number. But if you think about the gauge mediated supersymmetry breaking, look at the soft mass spectrum, the soft mass pattern. It goes like G squared divided by 16 pi squared F over N. So G, this is a visible sector, so G squared is the coupling, you know, gauge coupling, so 16 pi squared is one loop factor. F is the Suzy breaking, square root F is the Suzy breaking scale, the mass is the Messenger scale. So suppose you have this kind of stuff. You have Suzy breaking, and you have MSS. You have hidden sector. Let's forget about this first. But on the other hand, in the hidden sector, the soft mass still have this kind of relationship, but with different, you know, gauge couplings. But if you take these ratios, this ratio is important to determine the relic abundance. Actually, this roughly it goes F over M, and including this loop factor. So which means it is possible that in the hidden, if you have this kind of scenario, if you have the hidden sector with the gauge mediation, it is possible to keep the Wimper miracle, but dark matter is from the hidden sector. So there's a nice thing about this. Let's go to the next slide. Okay, so this is just some idea. So to realize this.
Why can't that still be with gravitino?
Yeah, lattice was still gravitino.
So how's that better than just saying? Okay,
I will tell you. Okay, so it's considered a GMSB inspired model. So we say it's inspired because it just, you know, we didn't really, you know, minimize the potential. We just get some idea from your MSSM. Okay, so the model had to be anomaly free, had to be chiral, so such that the mass scale is determined by Suzy breaking scale. If you input a vector-like particle, the mass scale actually could be arbitrary. A very intuitive choice is a stem model gauge group SU3 cross U, SU2 cross U1. The reason why we choose this is because we are lazy, because we can use our knowledge in the MSSM to do the analysis in the hidden sector. You can build a simple chiral model, anomaly free, let's say U1 cross U1, perfectly fine. So we assume SU3 cross U1 electromagnetism, like in the hidden sector, electromagnetism is not broken. So assume that there's only one generation of matter, and so the model is flavor free. So you don't go to this flavor mixing. Okay. So we assume the Yukawa couplings are order one. So then the model has only one scale, and x. Actually, this scale is determined by hidden sector Suzy breaking scale. If you look at the spectrum, so there's a weak scale, hidden sector weak scales. So all the massive particles, like W, Z, you know, Higgs, the Guino, Chargino, Neutralino, Tau, you know, B, hidden sector, top quark. So I use the third generation notation here. So this is stop, B, tau, S, neutrino. Okay, so there's also a massless particle, like the photon and the gluons. So here, because actually SU3 doesn't involve the relic abundance calculation, so we assume that, you know, the coupling of the SU, the hidden sector strong coupling is very weak, so the hadronization will not, you know, change your thermal history of the hidden sector much, okay, just for simplicity. And also neutrino is massless, and also gravitino is massless. Okay, now, you can think about which one should be the dark matter candidate. It turns out that all the neutral part here will decay. The neutrino will decay to gravitino plus photon. The neutrino will decay to gravitino plus neutrino. And we don't have a choice, right? So now, you have to choose a particle. This is charged on Higgs sector. On the other hand, this charged particle can be stabilized by U1 electromagnetism in the Higgs sector. So all the neutral massive particle will decay.
Could there be sort of a hidden neutron made up of three hidden quarks that's stabilized by baryon principle?
It is possible, but I think here, because I just pick up the charged particle, it is possible, but here for simplicity, I just choose, you know, some leptons or slepton as a dark matter candidate, because then I don't involve this SU3 stuff.
A related question, do you have hidden sector stars and stuff, you know, do you have other physics going on
okay.
in the sector?
Yeah.
You know, charged dark matter, the real physical sector is cooled out.
Yeah. Well, in principle, yes, but we don't go to that further step, because we just pick up the lepton in the Higgs sector as a dark matter candidate. But let's say you SU3 gauge coupling, right? If it's like has the same magnitude like the visible sector, I'm sure there's baryons. If the Higgs sector also has a baryon genesis or something like that, so there's the Higgs sector stars. But we do not go that further to consider the Higgs sector stuff. But I will talk about the Higgs sector CMB, actually.
So what's the strength of U1 in the
Okay, I'll go there, yeah.
Is it much weaker, though?
It could go on a larger scale. I will discuss about this issue later.
You think it would have to be really weak to prevent it from virializing, right?
To
prevent the dark matter from collapsing upon clumpy structures like baryons.
Well, okay. Okay, I'll discuss about this. So this all covered in this talk.
I'll ask you about hidden sector life at the end.
Yeah, actually, well, the thing is that when we understand the freeze-out behavior, we pretend ourselves sitting in the hidden sector, actually. So you can get to the both pictures, actually. They are all consistent. So actually, as I mentioned, that there's no good dark matter candidate in the GMSB MSSM, right? So, well, the thing is that you may ask, why not like electron is the lightest massive particle in the visible sector, but it cannot be dark matter because it has been ruled out. But the thing is that you may think, okay, if it's hidden sector U1, maybe no problem because there's no direct, evidence like for the hidden sector particle because it's neutral for us. But this actually is not true. So I will go through the constraint. So there's a couple of model parameters, MX, the GX, there's a Higgs sector Weinberg angle, the reheating temperature ratio, because the Higgs sector, visible sector, may not reheat it to the same temperature. Okay. So it's just for, very general kind of argument. So once you introduce a Higgs sector, of course, first thing you need to check is the BBN constraint. Because BBN, put a very strong constraint on the light degree of freedom at the BBN epoch. Okay? So actually, so the allowed extra degree of freedom is about, 2.52. And actually, so it's a very small number of light degree of freedom, two sectors can have temperature at the BBN epoch. But if you take the most general picture, two sectors not necessarily talk to each other. So if so, actually at the BBN epoch, the hidden sector could be colder. If it's colder, then you can avoid this bond. So this is the contour plot show you that how to avoid the BBN constraint. But actually, there are two ways to make the hidden sector colder. You can have the colder reheating temperature in the hidden sector. You begin with a very low temperature in the hidden sector. You also can have a more light degree of freedom in the hidden sector. Because when the universe expands, so assume the entropy is conserved. Okay? So in the visible sector, because there's a big mass hierarchy, so once the one heavy particle become non-relativistic, then so this will reduce. But the thing is that for the, it will transfer the entropy to the other part. Lighter species, it will heat it up. So in this sense that, in this sense, if the hidden sector has a lot of light degree of freedom, so you know, you just, so the temperature just the temp, okay, so the temperature just drops as the universe expands. It will not kind of heat from the, I mean, from the heavier particle. So this is a light degree of freedom. So this is a heavy degree of freedom. So you can see that if the hidden sector, even if you have more than 100 light degree of freedom, there's no heavy degree of freedom. You're still in this, around this control line. So this is different reheating temperature ratio. So this is still a rod. So the model I can see that I can, in the model A here. So okay, so then you have all set up. Then you can solve the Boltzmann equation, so you can get the standard picture for the freeze out, and you can check if you really can get the correct radical abundance. So this is the plot, so the mass mx, so gx here. So to answer your question, we just scale all the parameters. The space will give you correct radical abundance. Okay, so the mass scale can very broad actually. So without put any constraint, okay, we just assume that it's cold dark matter. So it's freeze out. When it freeze out, it becomes non-relativistic.
Well, isn't the answer to his question that the same as like before that it's
charged? Yeah,
it's charged. Yeah, so charge is here, right?
But the answer to my question was it can't decay to the ground if you know it's charged. But on the previous page, what was your conclusion that you're doing to avoid the constraint of light?
Oh, okay. Light degree, so my model is A. So the conclusion is that if the reheating temperature ratio, it's 0.8. I mean.
What is the reheating temperature ratio?
It's okay. So the reheating temperature ratio is the ratio when reheating, when infrared decay to reheat the both sectors. So this is the temperature in the hidden sector. This is temperature in the visible sector. Yeah, so it's kind of 20% colder if during the reheating. So
you're assuming the amplitude couples more strongly to us than to the
light or something. Yeah. So then the model is here. So if it's 0.8, a little bit colder, so it's, you know, it's allowed here. So the model I choose is here.
And the actual constraint was getting neutron-proton fraction right, or?
Which one?
But the actual constraint for BDN, there was the number of neutrons versus protons.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, because this is sensitive to the light degree of freedom. Yeah. Okay. So you can do the standard thing, just like you did, you know, for the visible sector. So there are two solid contours essentially follow the scaling because this is two lines. Okay. So the parameter give. They give correct radical abundance, these two lines. Are those that give weak scale, it's MSS masses. So this, there are two dashed lines. So in the parameter space, I choose to give rise to correct radical abundance, also give rise to, you know, the correct weak scale in the visible sector. And so the dimensional analysis is confirmed in this concrete model. And so there are two lines. Okay, so corresponding to different reheating temperature, so colder hidden sector actually requires smaller couplings to get radical abundance for given mass. So this is colder, this is hotter in the hidden sector. The reason is that if the hidden sector, you begin with a colder reheating temperature, so if the hidden sector is colder, so actually, so it's even during the equilibrium, the radical abundance, the number density of the hidden sector dark multiple is lower. So to get correct radical abundance, so you need a smaller cross section. So then you need the smaller coupling. Okay. So we just get the correct radical abundance, but we have to worry a lot of things. First of all, the hidden sector particle coupled to the hidden sector photon. Or there is some hidden sector photon, you have the CMB, okay? But actually, the charge actually will suppress a small structure. formation. I will tell you why. So there's also enhanced annihilation in the primordial halo. As I mentioned, this will reduce the relic abundance. The dark matter may form the bond state. Once they form bond state, they will annihilate to Higgs effect photon. You will lose the relics. And also, if there's charges, so there's a Rutherford scattering. So make the dark matter self-interacting and occlusional. So potentially, it will impact the properties of Bugitt crust and the shape of the galactic halo. So I go through one by one.
Does it also affect the origin of the CFD? I mean, the sound wave equations during the...
Okay, so I'll go... Sorry, I'll ask the question first. I will discuss about... Because now the hidden sector, actually, it's all hidden sector. So you have the hidden sector, CMB or photons. So now I don't assume the hidden sector, visible sector, they talk to each other besides the gravity. Okay, so you have the hidden sector decoupling, coupled to hidden sector photon, there's an acoustical oscillation in the hidden sector itself.
Why does the hidden sector ever decouple? The visible sector decouples when you get bound states, that you get neutral bound states net below 10 eV or whatever.
Oh, you mean the baryons, something like that?
If your thing is remaining as a lepton plasma forever, then it never decouples.
Yes. I'll discuss about this.
I mean, the photons never decouple.
The photons.
You don't get a hidden CMB, but there's a question of whether you get the correct visible sector CMB.
Why this will affect the visible sector CMB?
Well, because it's part of the...
Because at the time of visible CMB decoupling, you might still have strong coupling and strong acoustics in the
hidden sector.
Yes, so you get pressure waves.
Yeah, I'll discuss about this. Yeah, this is my worry, actually.
Yeah, are you assuming equal, positive and negative charge dark
yes.
matter? So
yes.
There's no asymmetry matter-antimatter
yes.
asymmetry in the dark
yes.
matter?
Yes, yes. So it's the total is neutral.
Total
is yes.
But moreover, there's no CP violation that is immediately obvious in the hidden center.
Yes.
So the usual scenarios that will take you to matter versus anti-matter don't play out.
Well, I mean, nothing is visible in the dark sector.
No, but you can worry that the dark sector is made of atoms with nuclei and leptons. But it's really lepton and anti-lepton gas. It's just leptons.
Well,
wait,
the hidden sector is basically the standard model with different parameters, right?
Yeah.
No, but there's no matter anti-matter.
The question is why?
Yeah, it's all assumptions, right? Well, except for these constraints you're talking about. We know very little. So. So there's an assumption.
So the thing is that you can, because it's hidden sector model building, we can go a lot of freedom. You can choose baryon genesis, you have hidden sector baryons. So we just focus on one little piece of the whole
big picture.
I should
say, as an experimentalist, I would love to have a hidden sector baryon.
Well, there's a reason to their work on this. Yeah, the hidden sector baryons. Yeah, it's a dark matter. Yeah.
I'm confused about the philosophy now. So you started with this sort of the new Lunt miracle of Fermi-Kumar.
Yeah.
But then, right at the end, because you had to change the relative reheat temperature, mm-hmm. you also had to pick a very specific annihilation cross section.
Doesn't that
remove the fact that you were using the new Lunt miracle?
It's a good point. So the reheating temperature I choose is within the order 1 parameter. Okay, so I wouldn't, because it's kind of general picture, right? If you have the hidden factor, it's completely possible that hidden factor, relatively, they do not talk to each other. So they have their own thermal best. But I don't want to go to say, okay, I have to tune the reheating temperature, it's 0.01, the ratio. Then, you just screw up, this Wimper miracle. But everything is within the order 1, and I would say it's still with the Wimper miracle.
Well, on what power of the ratio does it depend? That's the question.
Actually, the relic abundance actually is linearly proportional to the reheating temperature ratio. Very roughly, you can derive the analytic. Without, so if the C, the C I quote, it's kind of roughly order 0.8.
Okay.
It's not away from 1, so. Okay, so let's talk about structure formation. So it's a little bit more background. So the dark matter particle accumulate together due to the gravity. So they will form the small objects, the clumps. And the structure formation is hierarchical. So you form this small structure first. And so then it will, you know, the bigger objects will form via the mergers. And the mass of the smallest dark matter halo, the smallest, you know, clump, so actually this is determined by dark matter mass and the temperature at which it kinetically decouple from the other light particle species. Let's go to your question and your question. So actually WIMP and the hidden charge dark matter have different behaviors in the kinetic decoupling process. So here I go. Okay, so a little bit more about the kinetic decoupling. So after thermal freeze-out, dark matter particles still kinetically coupled to the thermal bath. The reason is here. So this is annihilation for dark matter particles. The two dark matter particles annihilate to the light particles. If you calculate the rate, so this is number density of the dark matter particle. Because it's a cold dark matter scenario, so it's non-relativistic. So this number density actually is Boltzmann suppressed. So this is the annihilation cross-section. So this is the elastic scattering. So you just tweak this finite diagram, you will get this. So you have dark matter particle, some light particle, let's say heating sector photon in this case, and the final state also dark matter particle, the light particle. Okay, so this process will not change the number density of dark matter particle, but it will change the momentum and energy. Because dark matter particle talk to this particle, it will gain the momentum. Okay, you can also calculate the rate, momentum transfer rate. So this is the number density of light particle. This is the cross-section. And the T over M, this is the temperature, this is the mass of dark matter. Because now dark matter is non-relativistic, so this ratio is smaller than 1. This ratio tells you every one collision how much energy you gain from the light particle. Okay, so after dark matter freeze out, the Hubble expansion rate is bigger than the annihilation rate. But there's one stage, actually, this momentum transfer rate can be bigger than expansion rate. The reason is here because the number density for the light particle is still relativistic, okay? But the number density for dark matter around the freeze out is Boltzmann suppressed. So there's one period, the NL, the number density of the light particle is much bigger than the number density of the dark matter. So you can have a scenario. The momentum transfer rate is bigger than the Hubble expansion rate. Hubble expansion rate is bigger than the annihilation rate. So of course, when the universe cools down, the Hubble expansion rate can be bigger than the momentum transfer rate. So the dark matter kinetically decouple from the thermal bath. Now, so this temperature, when this happens, the temperature is very important to determine the small scale of the dark matter halos. Okay, so here I'll give you an example. So dark matter coupled to the Higgs factor photons through a Compton scattering. It goes something like that, e to the fourth m squared. But for the WIMP, actually it also coupled to leptons. And if you think about a neutralino, it's coupled to leptons through some weak interaction. So you can have the weak interaction mass to the fourth, g to the fourth. And also, so you're going to balance your dimension, right? So you just put the temperature here. So you can get to the corrected dimension. So let's assume that, you know, where kinetic decoupling happens, roughly speaking, when the rate equal to Hubble expansion rate. So then you can calculate what's the TKD. So this is for WIMP. So this is for charged dark matter particle. Apparently, you can see that you even can, you know, make the MW equal to MX, you put into the number, apparently this actually is much bigger than this, which means for the WIMP, it's decoupled very early. But for the charged particle, it can decouple late. Okay? So the Compton scattering of the Higgins effect photon actually delays kinetic decoupling. But there is a consequence on this. Why this is bad sometimes. Okay, so it's a little bit cosmology background. So to understand this, we have to go through the cutoff scale. So the first cutoff scale I wanted to mention is the free streaming damping scale. So if the dark matter particle decouple from the thermal bath, so which means it will not talk to the thermal bath, the light species, it's just free streaming. So only gravity can, there's only interaction between, there's only interaction, the only interaction the dark matter can have is the gravity. Okay? So then, if so, in the some high, okay, in some regime, it's high, with a high density, the dark matter can leave. Okay? If it leave, it will erase all the structure smaller than the free stream length. Okay? Usually this is, you know, we understand. But actually, there's more than that. The whole process is more subtle because now the dark matter coupled to the Higgs effect photon. The Higgs effect photon is a radiation. So radiation has the pressure. So they try to expand. But the interaction between dark matter and also there's also gravity. So gravity try to pull things together. So whole system it's like the oscillation. Okay, the radiation try to, you know, expand, the gravity try to pull things together. It's like the oscillation. So actually, it is a, this is a harmonic oscillator. It's simple with external force. There's a periodical force on that. So if the omega, the oscillation, the frequency, the external force is too big, okay? So effectively, you can take the average of this value. So the effect is just drop. So you have the external force, so it's damping effect. So it damps the scale. But if the omega is bigger than A, so it is oscillation. So what you can do in reality is that you just replace this X by this density perturbation. So this is you know, not the density of dark matter. So this is the average density at this epoch at one point, at a certain point. Then you take this ratio. Then what usually you do is you just Fourier transfer, you put it into your equation, then you just solve it. So roughly speaking, from here you can get another damping effect. This damping scale roughly is Kolmogorov horizon when the dark matter kinetically decouple from the thermal bath. That's because, you know, all the mode inside of the horizon, so there's a damping effect. Outside of the horizon, there's no damping effect because the signal cannot, you know, travel faster than the Kolmogorov horizon. You know. So in the radiation epoch, you can estimate, then you'll get this number. So you can see the damping scale actually is determined by, so this is the temperature, the, you know, nowadays in the current temperature, the Planck scale. This is a kinetic decoupling temperature. So if the T is smaller, you know, the damping scale could be bigger. But remember, for the Higgs effect dark matter with the charge, Higgs effect charge, actually TKD is smaller. Okay? So you have to worry about this factor. And also another damping factor is a free streaming. So it goes like this. In most of parameter space, actually, there's a damping scale from the oscillation actually is larger than free streaming scale. So then, okay, so this is the idea. So then you have to go to the numerical work and to do the job. And okay, so this, we just calculated the kinetic decoupling temperature. So this is a different model parameters. The solid lines are the visible sector temperature where the kinetic decoupling happens. So you can see to the visible sector temperature as your clock. You can, you know, count what really happened in the Higgs factor. So this dashed line actually is the kinetic decoupling temperature for the Higgs factor. So you can see that for the smaller mass, decouple later. Because for smaller mass, you know, it's easy to keep this particle in the thermal bath, right? So cold heating sector decoupled earlier because, you know, in the beginning it is cold. And so after kinetic decoupling, before the kinetic decoupling, the dark matter temperature drops as A to the, this is the scale factor. It's minus one, just like the radiation. After the decoupling, it scales as, you know, A to the power of minus two. For the comparison, I show the WIMP. For the WIMP, for 100 GeV case, the TKD is 10 MeV. Okay, but for the this charged dark matter, so TKD, you know, it can much smaller than this. Of course, when you choose a different parameters, like what I have here, is that it's very close to the WIMP case. But for the parameter choice here, actually the TKD is much below the for the WIMP. Okay, so what's the problem with this? Okay, so then to check if that's very dangerous or not, we go through the calculated mat path spectrum, and for the different parameter choice, and you know, you get a mat path spectrum. So.
Can I understand that? Are those bumps basically the baryonic acoustic oscillations equivalent to the weak sector?
Yeah. So okay. So I choose that here. I choose a little bit big mass. So you know, cutoff scale actually the K is big. You know, but for the let's say 10 keV actually has been ruled out because you know your cutoff scale is too low. It's smaller than the 1 MPC. It has been ruled out by Kanti experiment. Okay, but what I wanted to say here is I go through this all the calculation we discussed, and we worried that because the hidden charge of dark matter is decoupled from the thermal bath late, probably it's tend to erase the small structure formation. But what I show you here is that, okay, although you have this concern, but we are safe. So for the comparison, so we can calculate the mass of the smallest halo. So the mass scale it goes something like that, and for comparison, the WIMP it goes to 10 to the minus 12 mass of sun to 10 to the minus 4 mass of sun, but for the hidden charge of dark matter, you can the M cut can go actually the range is a lot more broad, but unfortunately. You know, the counter observation is not that small enough, so to distinguish this. But I mean, for the small structure formation, I want to say there's no problem on that. Okay, so we go to the primordial halo. So as we calculate this quantity, so this is the mass of the smallest halo, the dark matter formed in the early universe. Okay. So around the redshift 30, the primordial halo collapse because of gravity. So in the beginning, you form some clumps, but later, due to the gravity, it will just collapse to the when the density of this primordial halo is about 170 times the average the density in the early universe. But in this case, because the mass is small, so you can calculate the velocity dispersion in this case. It's very small. It's it's around the, you know, 3 × 10⁻⁸. But the current, the velocity dispersion for the dark matter particle is about 10⁻3. So it's 5-order magnitude smaller in the primordial halo because the mass is very small for this primordial halo. Now, because this is small, so that annihilation cross-section actually is very strongly enhanced due to the velocity dispersion. So here's a little bit more. Maybe you heard about this Sommerfeld enhancement. But roughly speaking, if there's a long-range attraction force between two particles, the annihilation cross-section will be enhanced. You know, so the enhancement goes like alpha x divided by v. V is the velocity, the relative velocity of two particles. The alpha is, you know, the interaction strength. So the annihilation cross section goes, you know, you calculate annihilation cross section, and you have to times this enhancement factor. Actually, this enhancement factor is not very important in the early universe because this velocity is pretty big. you know, it's about, you know, very close to the speed of light. Even it's become non-relativistic. But in this primordial halo, this factor is huge. Now, you have to worry about the annihilation in this primordial halo. So you can calculate this fraction. So this is lump density of dark matter. This is enhancement to the annihilation cross section. So this is some, you know, the primordial halo parameter. So this is kind of order one parameter. So this is a time. Okay. So actually, CMB allows, you know, CMB measures total amount of dark matter. Actually, CMB allows 10% of dark matter can, you know, disappear in the early universe. For the case, actually, we consider, we calculated this F is 10 to the minus 8 to 10 to the minus 5. So this is fine. And the annihilation do generate photons, but actually they are not observable. So it will not affect the RCMB because they are hidden.
Another question. How do you avoid mixing photons?
Yeah, good point. So we don't consider this at this point. Okay, so there's models. Like, for example, I will discuss about this Niemann-Wieners model. They have kinetic mixings. If so, then this fraction had to be smaller than 10 to the minus 5. The reason is as follows. If the dark matter can annihilate to the visible sector photon, this visible sector photon can be very energetic. Because dark matter, if you have TeV, you know, 100 GeV, the photon is very energetic. If this photon is very energetic, it can absorb the by the intergalactic medium. It will ionize this medium. If ionized it, so before it's like you have the same B photons pass through this neutral medium, so it will not distort it. But now you have ions. If this is the same B photon pass through it, it will distort the spectrum. So this actually put a very strong constraint on this all kind of models with the solar enhancement. So actually, this is the fact is nearly ruled out all the model with solar enhancement. This is just very light parameter space is allowed due to this CMB. But now what I'm talking about here is that because it's hidden, so you don't need to worry about this, you know. But if you consider the observable effect, yes, you need to worry about it. So
just to be clear, the people who talk about superpublicans but now are trying to explain excess positrons.
Yeah.
And your superpublicans but wouldn't help with that at all, right? Because you're decaying the completely in particles.
Yeah.
So it's a totally different.
Yes, but there's also similarity. So, you know, you have long range force, you have the solar enhancement. But the way we began with a different purpose. In the beginning, we don't use this solar enhancement to explain the Palmyra. I will talk about this. Because we just, you know, if the hidden sector is charged, so we worry about, you know, if this solar enhancement will do the bad or dangerous things to you. But, you know. Okay. So the total relics are safe from the enhanced the annihilation in the primordial halo. Okay, so then we have to go to the bond state formation in the early universe. So because we have a positive and negative charge with the dark matter, so they can form the bond state. Once they form bond state, they will annihilate to hidden sector photon. You will lose relics. And due to the ionization process, actually, the bond state formation issues is more important when temperature is smaller than the binding energy. Okay, so for our galactic halo, the Milky Way halo, actually, you can calculate the bond state formation rate is pretty small. It's 10 to the minus 31 per second. And for the early universe, it's somewhat freeze out to now. So you have to make sure that, you know, the bond state formation rate is much smaller than the Hubble expansion rate. So we check this, and it turns out the total relics are still the same from the bond state formation. Okay, so now we go to the bond from the galaxy, the shape of galaxy. So now, if dark matter is charged, so they have a Coulomb scattering. Okay, so the cross section actually goes to v to the fourth. The relative velocity for velocity dispersion 10 to the minus 3. Okay, so this actually is a huge factor. And the elastic scattering due to the Coulomb interactions that cause energy and momentum exchange between dark matter particles. So because this is elastic scattering, so it's not inelastic. So the whole system will not lose any energy. So this is different with baryons. So we know the visible sector baryon is on the disk. You know, it's not the halo. The reason is the baryons lost energy because the baryon will it's catch charge, so it will form the bond state. It's become atom, but become molecule. But the collision will excite this atom, and when this excited state comes back to the ground state, it will emit the photons. So this is a loss energy. But this, so in that case, it's not elastic scattering. In this case, it's elastic scattering. The whole system will not lose energy. So
that's again because you chose parameters so that you wouldn't form.
Yeah, okay, that's a good point. So actually we do calculate, even you have a little bit of bond state formation I discussed, right? No, we do have a little bit of bond state formation, although the fraction is very small, right? So in principle, you also can calculate the bond state collision and the loss of energy. The way we check this, actually the effect is extremely small.
And you can also have inelastic collisions without bond state formation at 1 over alpha level. From initial state radiation.
Okay. So Brownian kind of thing. We check this. It's also small. Yes. And there's also plasma effect. So roughly speaking, so you can have there's a screening effect about this Coulomb scattering, right? The screening length actually is the balance. Inside of the balance is the elastic scattering. But if the beyond the balance, it's the plasma oscillation, you can cause the plasma oscillation. So this is not elastic effect because it's like the sound wave. We also check this safe. So okay, so we focus on this elastic scattering. However, if you have the elastic scattering exchange momentum energy, all the particles, just imagine all the dark matter particle in the halo, they will talk to each other. So they tend, so the heat can transmit very effectively in and out. So the whole system will tend to form a spherical halo instead of elliptical, because you're going to have more symmetry, tend to have more symmetry. But actually, the observation shows that there are many elliptical galaxies. So this galactic dynamics actually will set very strong bond on the prime space MX and alpha. Okay, so then you calculate the energy transfer rate. Okay, you do the this is a differential cross section. So this is a number density for the dark matter. So you integral with velocity distribution, and this is every collision how much energy you gain for dark matter particles. And so we take an example, the very elliptical halos recently observed by this group, and the velocity dispersion is 550 kilo per second, and the dark matter density is 0.7 GeV per centimeter cubic. And the R galaxy, for comparison, R galaxy, this number is 0.3 about, and this number is about 10 to the minus, well, it's about, yes, about semi. And so we demand that the relaxation time, that it's bigger than the age of galaxy. Okay. Okay. So I will show you the result late. Then, before I show you the result, I will discuss about the Burritt crust. Okay. So Burritt crust observation actually is a very solid evidence for the dark matter. So, okay. So there are some scenarios that you call the modified gravity. So people argue that probably not because of dark matter, because the gravity maybe had to be modified in the larger scale than So, but the thing, it turns out this Burritt crust observation tend to favor the modified gravity. What's really happening is that there are two clusters, one is bigger, one is smaller. Okay, so they collide each other, they pass each other. From the X-ray, you can see this, the red one is a baryon. the baryonic, you know, the electron baryons, like the geomat. Okay, from X-ray, you can possibly see that. And also, the blue part actually is dark matter. You can see them from the weakling thing. You know, you can map to the density distribution. Roughly speaking, the red, the blue part, they just pass each other. They do not talk to each other much. But the red part, they will, you know, they will attack each other. They will change the form, then, you know, the left. Okay? So actually, when two clusters hit each other, they pass by each other. This smaller one that we call the subcluster actually doesn't lose much particles. It's still there. So actually, the survival of the subcluster after having moved through the main cluster puts a strong bond on the collision cross section. Because if dark matter have a collision, like the, you know, like baryons, you know, they will stick each other, you know, they will slow down and they will change the form just like the baryons. But it turns out this is not true. So then you can put a bond on that. So the we demand the fraction of the dark, the particle loss be no greater than 30%. So this, you know, from the experiment. And we calculate the rate. So this brute cost also can set a bond on the parameter space of the collision. Okay, so this is the main result. I wanted to say that all the small structure formation, bond state formation, you know, enhanced annihilation, actually didn't really put the bond on the parameter space. But the elliptic, the halo shape and the bullet cast do put the bond on the parameter space. The strongest bond is from the elliptic shape of the dark matter. The dark matter halo, so above this line has been excluded. This is a brute cluster bond constraint. Okay, so this is the three model we choose. So you can see that, you know, you, for reasonable parameter choice, you either go to, you know, about 20 or 30 GeV. In this case, you have to go to more than, you know, 1 GeV. So it's very surprising that, you know, this, the shape of galaxy can put such a strong bond on the Higgs sector, you know, charged dark matter particle, because you may imagine that, you know, because you didn't see it, probably there's no bond, but it turns out there's a bond on this. Okay. So, brute cluster bond is weaker, although we use the same differential cross section. The reason is that in the brute cluster, the velocity, the relative velocity is much bigger. So, it's about 4,800 kilo per second. So that's a reason, because the cross section goes to 1/4 velocity. Okay, so the bond is weaker. So for the, okay, I wanted to say that typically for the dark matter mass 100 GeV, the Higgs sector fine structure, you know, constant had to be the smaller than 10 to the minus, you know, 4 to satisfy the bond. So the lower mass can go 1 GeV for Higgs sector. Charge your dark matter if you know you allow like all the one parameter choice. Okay, so here is a summary of the of the hidden charge of dark matter. Now we go to this effect of the bond on this the models motivated to explain the Palmyra and Fermi anomaly. So last year the Palmyra collaborations say some anomaly behavior about the positron fraction. So this is a theoretical model, the standard diffuse model of the
Can you just ask a really naive question?
Yes.
Couldn't you have just made the dark matter particle charged under some global symmetry, a discrete global symmetry, and gotten out of all these bounds?
Yes.
Instead of, I mean, your whole point here is that if alpha is small enough, so the U1 is basically a global symmetry, you can evade all the bounds. So could you have just said there's a Z2, the dark matter is odd? We have all this stuff? I mean, you're basically being driven to that anyway, because you're bound on alphas that should be 10 to the minus 5.
You can, let's say you have a model, let's say you have the hidden factor from Z2 symmetry, okay? Yes, I agree that you, because you don't have this, you know, issues around you. But the thing why I wanted to draw this conclusion is that I begin with a model in the hidden sector. They just have the U1. unbroken charged.
Okay. It's almost engaged.
Well, you can go to higher mountains and get
a... Yeah, let's say you can go here, right? So then still in the some, you know, perturbative regime, like 10 to the 10 TeV, for example, and everything is still fine, it's here. But...
isn't the spirit of this just, could it be that there's charged dark matter in the world? I mean,
yeah, as far as I can tell that this, you know, it's not ruled out yet.
I think there are... Sure.
So just another naive question then. When alpha is order one, when it's not really small, very naively, I mean, the reason that baryons are much more clumped than dark matter in normal models is that the baryons radiate. Everything carries angular momentum, but the baryons can radiate photons.
Yeah.
If the alpha is of order one, why doesn't the hidden sector dark matter also hit, you know, radiate hidden sector photons and collapse?
Yes. Okay, that goes to the question. So there are many ways to lose the energy. One is the Bernstein radiation, as you mentioned. Okay. One is the collision, molecule collision. So although you form the neutral atoms, but because of the collision, it will excite the atoms. When excited state go back to the ground state, it will radiate the photon. Okay. That's the effect of the cyclotron radiations. If you have the magnetic field the particle goes through, it's a cyclotron radiation. Okay. So there's roughly there's three effects to lose energy. Okay. For baryons, as you mentioned, for baryons, the main issue for the baryon to lose the energy is that due to the collision. Because baryons, they already form the, you know, atom, it's neutral. You may think it's fine, but the thing is that due to the collision, it will excite the ground state to the excited state. Then the excited will come back, it will lose the photon. Okay? So that's the main problem of the baryons. If so, the baryon lose the energy because angular momentum is conserved. It has formed on the disk. Yes, but in the here, because the dark matter particle, it's not a bound state. It's not a bound state. It's just, you know, the E plus E minus.
And moreover, it's extremely heavy. So one of the reasons you can lose energy so easily in a baryon plasma is that the electrons are light, so they can radiate like crazy.
So you say these things are basically not moving, and so they're not radiating.
They're moving very slowly. They're very heavy. And since, remember, the density is what we know, so if you increase the mass, they're quite rarefied compared to any kind of baryon plasma you deal with. So when you get up to the upper right-hand corner of that plot, I'm not surprised that you can't get stars and that you can't get, you know, baryon plasma dynamics, because everything's just so slow-moving and slow.
One more comment is that even here, right, it's like, you know, 10 GeV, for example, here. The point is that this thing, actually, the fraction of the bond state is very, very small. Actually, another way to say is actually alpha is small. You are right. Actually, the rate of form bond state is very small. Once they're small, you know, the energy loss due to the baryon excitation actually very small. So there's no way this particle can lose energy.
I'm sorry, Ben, you just got me very confused. If these particles are heavy and moving very slowly, that's the ideal thing for gravitational collapse. Heavy objects, which are just not moving really much to verify. So I guess they are moving enough to sort of not
avoid collapse. Yeah.
But the reason, when you take a pile of baryons and you say, I want them to form a star and then cool and collapse, there's a cooling process that has to get you there. Mm-hmm. And if you start with just massive things decoupled, they're happy to orbit at very high density.
But to get them to
stop and then collapse into a star, you need the sort of cooling phase where they form atoms and radiate. And if you're missing that,
I think it's important that these things move much more slowly than regular CDM. I mean, if they were like regular CDM, the order one alpha would work.
So this is the Palmyra, and this year there's a Fermi result. So you can see they measure the total aflux E plus E minus, and so this the blue one is the standard standard model for the diffusion, cosmic rays, and this is a little above all these lines.
How well is that standard model known?
How well?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no. The thing is that you have to assume the distribution of magnetic field. But the strength is that you know because you assume the equal partition, roughly speaking.
You have to know what comes out of pulsar and how many.
Yeah. You have to know all these things. But if you, like these people did, you assume that some kind of model, you have the deviation from here. Well, actually, the other work, they say that, all this anomaly can be explained just by astrophysics, like the pulsar. Okay, there are a couple of papers on this. And some people come to the idea that maybe this is the indirect signal for the dark matter. Okay, but if this is dark matter, first of all, you need a very large annihilation cross-section. Let's say you want to have a 1 TeV dark matter, you have a 1 TeV dark matter particle, because, you see, for the Palmyra, actually, dark matter particle could be a little less, let's say 100 GeV or 500 GeV is fine to explain Palmyra because, the energy actually is pretty low here. This anomaly is 10 GeV. But for the Fermi, actually, the energy is about 100 GeV for the E plus E minus. So you prefer heavy, dark matter annihilation. If 1 TeV dark matter particle, so this cross-section is a cross-section to get the correct radical abundance. So you have to the boost factor. That's about 1,000 boost factor to get fit into the same the scenarios. But then you may wonder, okay, get so big an annihilation cross-section, how about the early universe? Because you reduce your relics a lot, like by 1,000. You couldn't, don't get to the correct relical abundance. Another issue is that because for the Palmyra, you just say the anti-electron, positron, but you didn't say the anti-proton. So the processor has to be very leptonic, But this doesn't fit into your WIMP model. And also there's astrophysics source for this anomaly, but you can have a model to of course you can build the model and to explain the dark matter model to explain this phenomena. So I take an example by this NEMA and Weiner and their company. So the idea here is that so if dark matter has a long range force, okay, just like what I did, but in their case the Higgs factor gauge group is broken. Okay. If it's broken, but the Higgs factor gauge group, the Higgs factor gauge point had to be very light, let's say below than 1 GeV. Okay. But the dark matter is 1 TeV, so there's a long range force. Okay. So if the Higgs factor force the carrier is massless, like what I discussed, the enhancement goes through alpha over V. Okay, but if it has mass, so the enhancement factor actually can saturate to this factor. So this is the Higgs factor gauge boson mass. This is dark matter mass. The reason is that if the wavelength of the incoming dark matter particle is much longer than the interaction regime of this phi, so it has a cutoff. If you have this light Higgs factor particle, you can do the Sommerfeld enhancement. Okay, they try to boost the annihilation cross section now, but in the early universe, as I mentioned, because the velocity dispersion is small, the boost factor is not that big. It just solve this problems, and also furthermore, because we don't like the hadronic channel. Because we didn't say anti-proton, but if you assume this phi mass, the mass is smaller than 1 GeV, so then the dark matter particle annihilate to this phi field, because the phi field can decay to leptons, okay? But if the mass is smaller than 1 GeV, this Higgs factor field will not decay to the baryon, right? So it's kinematically forbidden. Roughly, you have the phi field. This phi field also decay to leptons. Okay, but if the phi field is, light enough, it cannot decay to protons. Right, it cannot decay to quarks basically. So it's just forbidden. Okay, so on that, what I wanted to say is that, so because roughly speaking, the Swanson enhancement goes like, you know, if you take into this massive effect, it's a minimum of these two values. So to get to the bigger Swanson enhancement, you prefer larger alpha, okay? And you prefer the smaller the mass of the this scalar field.
And the reason we never saw phi and e plus e minus colliders is the branching ratio is really, really tiny.
Say it again, sorry.
Why did we never see phi by the reverse method?
Oh, okay, yeah, okay. That's a bunch of discussion now. Yeah, I think let's see. Yeah, okay, so to find this phi, you need the connection between this, right? So you can think about this is from kinetic mixing, but the kinetic mixing usually, you know, if this is the Higgs sector, you know, some vector boson, so you're gonna have F mu nu prime, so epsilon, you know, some factor. So typically this epsilon could be, you know, small, it's 10 to minus 3. Well, if it's generated by some loop factor, so it's typical scale is 10 to minus 3. If you treat this as a free parameter, you can go as small as possible.
The reason we never saw it is tiny branching ratio.
Yeah, tiny branch ratio.
So people are designing experiments.
Yeah, people are.
For this purpose.
Yeah. So. Okay. So what I wanted to say is that we can apply all the constraints we have to this kind of model, although the phi has a little mass. But as we discussed before, the strongest bond is from the halo shape. So we just consider the halo shape. If you have a little mass, then you know the differential cross section goes a little differently. So you have the mass here, and so if the mass equal to zero, then you just recover the thing what you have, and you calculate the interaction rate, the momentum transfer rate, and here you can just do the integral just this here cross section for the momentum transfer. It goes something like that. So in the denominator, you have also the v squared t. The v to the fourth dependence here, and you know there's b factor is the mass of the phi, so this is the mass of the phi field, this actually is the mass times the velocity. So this is a nice meaning, a physical meaning, because 1 over mv nx times v is the wavelength of the incoming dark matter particle, so 1 over m phi is the interaction range of the phi field. So actually, there's a tension between the large Swanson enhancement you need to fit to the Permira and the Fermi, and there's a stringent bond from the elliptical halo shape. Because for the elliptical halo shape bond, you prefer small x. Okay, you prefer larger n phi. On the other hand, you wanted to get a large enhancement factor, you need the large alpha x and the smaller n phi. Okay, so this bond is the strongest bond. So I give you an example. So this is a take from this paper, these people. So they use this model, this Nima and his company's model to fit the Permira and the Fermi. So this is the Permira fitting. So this is the dark matter annihilation contribution. This is the background. So this dot is the data. So this is the fitting. And this is for the Fermi. So this is the background, this is dark matter contribution, so the total field parameter is here. We take some, you know, benchmark point, you know, take the model, so you need enhancement is a 1,500. Okay, so now you can, I took this, you know, fitting regime from this paper, and so roughly speaking, you can impose the bond from here, as I did before, for given mass mx, because they fix the n phi to fit this paper, they pick the n phi they take is 250 MeV. Once you know n phi, if I know the mx, then I know the alpha x, right? To satisfy this elliptical bond, and so then you can make a plot. Once you know the alpha, you know the velocity dispersion for the our galaxy, and you know the for mx, you can calculate the enhancement you can have. Okay, So this is a limit from the galaxy halo bond. Above this line, it's all excluded by the halo shape bond. But it turns out to fit the Fermi and the Permula, you're going to have a lot of enhancement. So which means all this parameter space has been excluded. So I would say, in general, the elliptical halo shape excluded the parameter space that needed to explain Permula and the Fermi.
So you can do all this analytically. I mean, people do these complicated dark matter simulations to get the structure.
To get what?
To derive the structure.
To derive what structure?
Just,
you know,
derive large scale structure and compare.
The CDM, the N-body.
Yeah.
Okay.
You didn't seem to need to do that anywhere here.
Okay. So, someone, as far as I know, that someone did the round range kind of with the round range force with the cutoff, like the N-5. Some people did the N-body simulation on that. But if you just the Coulomb force, I think nobody did it because technically it's very hard to do the job.
And you didn't need it? Is it because of what Shama said that it's basically? We
didn't do this. Yes. So you're thinking that maybe this round range force has impact on the larger structure formation. That's what you're saying, right?
But then I'm just asking what you could do analytically, what you need.
Okay. Oh, I see. So for the kinetic decoupling, things like early universe, before the matter radiation equality, you can do that analytically, like what I did. Afterwards, you really talk about the structure formation, so then you have to do the simulation. Okay, I don't know that part of the simulation, but before the...
But you're saying also the shapes of the galaxies, it's a little enough, thing. You can do it again.
Okay, a good point. But you see, the point is that if you really wanted to do what's really the shape of the galaxy, you need to do the simulation, because it's after the, you know, the matter radiation equality, they form the galaxy. If there's a round universe, what's the heat transfer? And then you have to do it. But the thing what I calculated is, we calculated the rate of the dark matter particle to change its kinetic energy by order unit. So we put a bound. So we didn't have a parameter, let's say, how spherical you have, the ABC parameter, you could do the fitting. No, we don't have this. But what we have is, we just imagine that if one particle, they change its kinetic energy in the edge of a galaxy by order magnitude. So which then we roughly put a bound on that. So this we can do analytically. But to be very precise, how this effect will change the shape exactly, you have to do the simulation. But I don't have an answer on this. Okay. So of course it's not completely ruled out of this scenario, because you may have some substructure in the halo, so then the velocity dispersion is very small, let's see. Then you can, you know, still get to the big enhancement. Maybe you can go to some resonance regime to fine tune the parameter such that, you know, the enhancement is calculated different. It roughly goes alpha divided by v squared then times some factor. You can still get large enhancement. But what I wanted to say here is that if you just stay with the general picture of the dark matter halo with the velocity dispersion is about 10 to the minus 3, and then you assume, you know, the local density 0.3 or 0.4, then you do the fitting and do the job. Actually, the halo should exclude this. Okay, so here's my summary. So dark matter models with long range forces are well motivated. We consider two examples. So we study the different cosmological constraints based on the wind plus heating factor model. So we call the wind plus, in the heating factor, it's not the wind, but I still keep the wind miracle in the heating factor. So we go through the small structure formation, bound state formation, enhanced annihilation, and the halo shape, and the bullet cast. And so at this point, I would say the hidden charge dark matter is allowed, the parameter I have showed before. And we also study this bond on the dark matter models motivated by the Permula and the Fermi. And you know, it turns out the halo shape bond put a very strong constraint on these models. Thank you.